Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-ah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Air Force nurse Lieutenant Colonel Jason Gleason about National Nurses Week. Then Judy Elias will share how Heroes to Heroes helps hurting vets. And Chaplain Scott McChrystal will talk about our dependence on God. Of course, we'll conclude with our military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to introduce Jason Gleason. He's a retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel. He's a nurse. He's got a doctor's degree. And not surprisingly, we're going to talk about National Nurses Week. So welcome, Jason. Glad you could join us.
Thank you, Denny, for that kind introduction. Yeah, I'm thrilled to be with you. And what a fine day in America it is indeed, right?
I'm just thrilled to be with you this morning.
Uh-huh.
Jason, start by telling us about your time in the Air Force.
You know, I was just so honored to do 20 years in the military, serving this great country of ours. And I serve with the 120th Medical Group here out of Montana, and they're part of the 120th Airlift Wing. We used to be a fighter wing. Yeah, we had some F-16s and F-15s over the years, and now we have the C-130. Yeah, so absolutely an amazing unit to be a part of, and just an incredible 20 years serving our country.
Wow. So that's, I know, wondered where the C-130s went. I jumped out of them a lot when I was in the 101st Airborne Division. But I never landed in one. I wonder what that's like. Anyway.
Imagine that.
Okay. Talk to us about your medical career, because obviously you were interested in medicine before the Air Force, and you're still practicing medicine. So talk about your medical career.
You know, it started in high school. I had a teacher, and she said, you know, anybody interested in healthcare, you should volunteer at your local hospital. So I did that. I volunteered in the emergency department in my hospital in my hometown. Absolutely loved it. And, you know, the adrenaline rush and just being able to help people when they needed it the most as a volunteer. And it just really inspired something inside me. So I went to nursing school and became a registered nurse and then a nurse practitioner in 2001. I'm a board certified family nurse practitioner now. Been practicing for 2 decades. And I recently received my doctorate last year, and it's absolutely been an incredible career because of the wonderful people I've met and the patients that I've had an opportunity to take care of.
Well, you know, there is something really satisfying in helping people in need, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. No greater honor.
Okay. Coming up May, well, I guess all of May, is National Nurses Month, and there's National Nurses Week. Talk to us about that. You seem to know a little bit about nurses.
Absolutely. You know, next week is National Nurses Week, and it's such an important profession that now you'll see a lot of coverage out there that it's actually Nurses Month, an entire month devoted to honoring the work of nurses everywhere. And you know, Denny, there's 4.2 million nurses in the United States. And out of those, 355,000 nurse practitioners like myself. And as you know, we've been on the front lines of this COVID-19 pandemic. And honestly, one of the most interesting times in history as a country. And so it's just such a great honor to be part of this profession. And I want to, you know, take the opportunity to thank my colleagues across the country. And I know that my national organization, the American Association of Nurse Practitioners that I belong to, and again, I'm one of those 355,000 nurse practitioners across the country. We just so appreciate the work of our nursing colleagues from coast to coast and the profound difference that they've made in the lives of Americans and actually saved lives, especially over the last few years. So it's such an honor to be part of this profession and to celebrate during May, which is National Nurses Month.
Well, you know, nobody ever wants to see a health practitioner until they need to, though occasionally we'll go see them in order to not see them in an emergency situation. But there's no doubt that when the time comes, we need to see you. And there's more out there than just, I've got a problem, so I come see you. There's some things we can do that is proactive, that we can be practical citizens and look at. And you and your family have faced a few of those crises, haven't you?
We have. You know, my perspective is interesting, like other people out there as well that might share similar views and perspectives. You know, I have the perspective of a healthcare provider taking care of patients every day, along with my nursing colleagues and physician colleagues. But I also have an interesting perspective as being on the recipient end of healthcare when my family absolutely needed it the most. I have to say, I just honor and respect and appreciate all the care given to us. In 2011, my wife of 16 years, and we had 3 young boys at the time, ages 7, 10, and 14, they were at that age. at that time. And it was a perfect day, a summer day. And she was putting groceries away in the fridge in the morning in great health, just turned 40 years old. And then an hour later, she was in the emergency department with a devastating stroke. And so I know both sides of the healthcare continuum, both as a provider and also as a patient and a family member.
And that's something that, again, I don't know that you can ever be prepared for, but you can be better prepared for it should it happen. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Nurse Dr. Jason Gleason. This is National Nurses Month, but we're also talking about that crisis that we need to be prepared for. Tell us more about that, Jason. How do you get ready for something like that? Or do you?
You know, Denny, I have to say, I remember going through this just like it happened yesterday, even though it was 2011. And I remember thinking to myself, at 39 years of age, you know, you have a wonderful family, life is great. And then this just hits you right in the face, right? And so I just remember thinking, I wish there was a checklist to go through this. And I'm here to tell people there isn't. There is no checklist to get you through something like this. But what will get you through is your support system, your healthcare providers, your nurses, your nurse practitioners, your friends, your colleagues, your pastors, if you go to church, you know, just those people that surround you, they get you through it. And this is not a loss that you ever get over. That love ran way too deep. And folks out there across the country right now, they can relate to that. They've lost somebody and you never get over that pain, but you do get through it. You do get through it. And that's where the hope is, that you can get through these crises. And we do that best if we do it together.
Very well said. Jason, going back now to National Nurses Week, what can we do to appreciate our nurses? Go to a medical clinic? I don't know that you stop to think about saying thank you to all the good people that are there. That is probably not a bad idea, is it?
Not at all. No, and I know we appreciate that. Just like our veterans appreciate being acknowledged out in public, you know, our Vietnam vets, by the way, thank you for your service in Vietnam. I read your biography and I'm just so impressed with your service and thank you for that. But I recognize, you know, with our veterans, you know, especially our Vietnam vets that wear their ball caps that say, you know, served in Vietnam, and they wear those with such pride and honor as they should. And so I go out of my way to thank them. And I'll tell you what, this look comes upon their face, this look of appreciation like I've never seen. The same thing occurs with nurses. So if you see a nurse out there, thank them. If you see somebody in scrubs at a coffee shop, walk up and say, gosh, thank you for the work you do. That means a million to them. I mean, they're so appreciative of those kind words. I also love it when I see on social media in our town and probably across the country and other communities, you've seen this, that, you know, they post online, you'll have a unit of nurses on a floor, an emergency department or a clinic, and they post online a picture with pizzas that somebody dropped off to their clinic, you know, just bless them with pizzas or lunch or donuts or some kind of food item or just some kind of token appreciation. It doesn't have to be much. It can be everything from a simple thank you all the way up to, you know, just blessing an entire unit or a group of nurses with lunch, which they often don't get. Yeah. So they often don't get lunch breaks because they're working so hard.
You know, if there's anybody who's committed their life to serving the public, particularly in times of crisis, certainly our medical professionals, our nurses are in that category. And we do need to appreciate them. And it doesn't cost you anything to say, thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for your service. Jason, thank you. I think that's our final thought for today. Appreciate those people, and particularly this month, our nurses, but every month, our nurses and medical professionals that are there to take care of us, that have dedicated their lives to do that. That's awesome. Jason, thank you. Thanks for joining us today. Thank you for all you've done to keep us all healthy. I appreciate you, brother. We are brothers. We're
absolutely. Absolutely. To the core. Yeah. Thank you so much, Denny. I appreciate this time this morning. Go out there and save a life, everyone.
Yes, sir. Well said. Right. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to balance on one foot for 3 minutes, then do the same thing on the other foot. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com. We are fighting for the American farmer. U.S.-only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com. Use your promo code FREEDOM and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Danny Gillum, PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Front Lines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Judy Isaacson Elias. She's the founder and CEO of Heroes to Heroes Foundation. They take hurting combat vets to Israel for healing. I went on one of their trips several years ago, and I can vouch for the fact that it works, and apparently it's getting better. An amazing program. Welcome back, Judy. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Denny. It's been a while since we've been connected, so I'm really excited to be here and hear your voice. And I'm just honored that you're honoring us yet again. That means a lot to me.
Hey, how can I not? It means so much. Take a minute or two and just tell listeners what happened that led you to create Heroes to Heroes. That could be a whole interview in itself, but give us a quick overview.
Okay, I'm going to do it as quickly as I can. I grew up in a home with a father who was a World War II veteran. Second Day Normandy, Battle of the Bulge, liberated a concentration camp, stayed in Germany to help resettle people. He, in many ways, never came home. And I grew up in a very turbulent household, and it affected me so greatly. And at the time, I didn't understand what was going on, why my father was kind of checked out, and then he'd check in and then check out. And it was difficult. And my mother didn't understand it, and it caused her all kinds of anxiety. And the anxiety remains with all of us till today. When I was 16 years old, I left. I ran away. I could not be in that home anymore. I stayed with a friend, and I stayed in touch with my father. And at one point, he called and said, "Would you please go on this program to Israel? There's a pilgrimage to Israel with this Jewish youth group, would you go?" And at first I said no. I didn't want anything to do with being with my faith, with Israel. And then he asked me, "Would you do it for me?" And at that point, I couldn't say no. And I went, and I was enjoying being with friends. And the day came where we were going to the Western Wall. And I said to a friend of mine, "I can't go. I can't. I've cursed God. I have no relationship with God. God wouldn't want me to go. It's kind of desecrating the holy space for me to go there." And friends of mine said, "No, you're here. You have to do this." And they physically brought me to the Western Wall. And when I put my hand on that wall, it was like my whole life came together. And I just said, "There's something going on. There's something bigger than me." And for the first time in my teenage life, I felt as if I wasn't alone. And I came back and I started reconnecting to my faith, tried to reconnect a little bit to my family, but that is still a work in progress. But I knew there was something there. And I raised my children to be very faithful, to be very connected to their faith. They still are, and they're teaching their children the same thing. And then my father passed away as a result of a car accident on his way to a veterans meeting where they were planning on continuing to help disabled vets. And it shook me to my core, and I started learning about my father. And I started learning that he found the most comfort in being with other vets. And that was the only time he was comfortable, but my father never spoke. He never talked about what he went through. He wouldn't go to the VA because he said, "I won't take money from the government." So he never got the help he needed. And in 2009, I was invited to Walter Reed to visit our soldiers. And when I saw our soldiers, learned about the suicide rate, I said, "There's something I have to do. I don't know what I'm going to do." I volunteered at organizations, wasn't thrilled, ended up saying, "I have to do something about the suicide rate. This is a crime. This is a national crime." And I started reading about suicide. And when you dig deep into suicide causes, it comes down to, looks like it comes down to two things, belonging and faith. And we've taken both out of our country. So as you can see, our entire country is suffering from a suicide epidemic because people have no foundation with their faith. They have no connections. They don't belong to anything. So I looked back and I said, wow, what if I took veterans of all faiths on their own personal journey, their own faith journey to Israel, to the Holy Land, where they can experience their faith where it all began in an unashamed manner? Wouldn't that work the way it worked for me as a 16-year-old? And so Heroes to Heroes was born in March 2010. We just celebrated our 13th year. We've had a long-term research study done on the program. It is the most effective program to work against the determinants of moral injury, which is what we focus on. And we're booming. The program is now an 18-month program where you work with a team during the spiritual portion of the program, which is the central 5 months. You take your 10-day journey to Israel and you focus on spirituality, faith, reconnection, and finally build a life plan to what are you going to do for the rest of your life, at least for the next few years, to make your life mission-driven and faith-driven.
And let me tell you, folks, I went on a trip, but it was fairly early on in the program. It wasn't as well developed as it is now. I was touched spiritually, emotionally, intellectually, physically, and probably other ways. It was an amazing and totally positive time. It made me take a good long look at every aspect of my life. And that's before they upgraded it. This is an amazing program, and it's available now. We're talking with Judy Elias about Heroes to Heroes. Judy, we've only got a couple of minutes left. How can a family or a hurting veteran plug in and learn more about what, when, how to get involved?
Absolutely. First thing, go to heroes2heroes.org, heroes2heroes.org. Click on the veteran space, read through it, and then there's an application. You can apply for the program. If you need information on the program, just write to info@heroes2heroes.org for application information. You can write to Roberto, R-O-B-E-R-T-O, at heroes2heroes.org. He will help you wend your way through the application, which is a fairly simple application process, and help you be put on a team to begin your journey. And it is an 18-month journey. It's work. There are one-on-ones with your coaches. You're assigned a coach that you're with for the 18 months and five other team members. You work together to support one another.
Oh, and by the way, Judy, I know that you're a nonprofit. You can use donations. How can listeners support Heroes to Heroes?
Please, please go to heroes2heroes.org. Click on the donate button. We have over 700 veterans on our waiting list. We expect to onboard about 100 to 120 this year. We do triage, but we need your help to grow. We need to make that 100 into 200, then 300, then 400 a year.
Yes, ma'am. Judy, I'm going to have you back to talk some more about what the trips are like now. Thank you for taking time to join us today, and thank you for your service to our nation's veterans. God bless you. You're a patriot who put feet to her vision and her need. Thank you for being part of the team of Frontlines of Freedom. God bless you.
Thank you, Denny.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Army vet Bill Mersch will discuss leadership and we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice, then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. It's a real pleasure to welcome back to the show my good friend Scott McChrystal. Scott spent 12 years in the infantry and then about 20 years as a chaplain. So welcome back, brother. I appreciate your service, even though we never did serve together.
Well, thank you. You preceded me just a little bit chronologically, but I've appreciated you and all that you've done both in the service and since you left the service. And I wish there were more people like you trying to get what I would say is a message of truth out to the American people.
Well, that's another thing you and I have in common. And while I'm a ring knocker, I went to West Point. Your last duty station was at West Point, wasn't it?
Indeed, it was.
So we've got that in common. After you retired from the military as a chaplain, you worked as a chaplain coordinator or something like that for your denomination, didn't you?
I work as a chaplain. My official title with the Warrior's Journey, it's a nonprofit that seeks to help anybody in the military community, family or otherwise, veterans, deal with the invisible wounds, of which there are many people struggling with those, as you well know.
Yes.
And I also work with another great organization called Battle Ready Ministries. And the vision that my chaplain friend got from the Lord was to try to bring out a message, teaching and so forth, preaching conferences to help the Church of the United States, the Christian Church, get ready for the chaotic times in which we've now arrived, for sure.
Well, we are certainly moving in that direction. So basically, when you, quote, retired, unquote, you didn't retire, or either that or you failed retirement.
I failed retirement. I got a redo when I became the endorser for 14 years with the Assemblies of God, and then I retired again, and I'm afraid I'm flunking that course, but I'm happy to flunk it.
Well, I'm one ahead of you. I failed retirement 3 times. You're only at 2.
That's right.
But,
that's exactly right.
You kids, you'll come along. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Chaplain Scott McChrystal. Scott, talk a little bit about first Warrior's Journey and then Battle Ready Ministries, because we need to keep helping each other, and our community is not exclusively, but certainly the military community, and those two ministries certainly speak to that. Talk about Warrior's Journey.
Sure. In a nutshell, the Warrior's Journey was started about 7 years ago. I was in on the ground floor with Kevin Weaver, and we were looking at a way to reach the military community and decided to make the initial reconnaissance into doing it through the internet. And so we've done that since then, because you figure, you know, who doesn't have a phone? Who doesn't have a computer? And that's not just in America, but worldwide. It's actually amazing. So we got into that. And then as we saw the needs and we did some studies, we even used some statisticians at Harvard to validate what we'd done. We decided that there are thousands, tens of thousands of vet organizations that are focusing on the physical wounds and, you know, financial problems and all that. We decided we would go after trying to help vets both in the preventive as well as the treatment of invisible wounds. And of course, the chairman of the board there are the issues associated with suicide. And I'll give you just one stat, not bragging, but it's true. We have dealt with over 1,700 veterans or family members that have come to us needing help regarding suicide, whether it was an ideation or whether they literally had a gun to their head. And so far, we have been able to help all of these people. All of them, to the best of our knowledge, are still living, Denny. And we don't have any rocket scientists on our staff, and we certainly don't do this alone. But what we have found out is that when you can talk to people in a common language and convey to them that you genuinely care about their lives and that you've had some personal experiences or know people or been in the same culture like the military, it's very effective to get their attention. And I would say I've probably had, 20 or 30 wives over the recent years say, well, my husband never says anything. He's a NAM veteran or this or that. And I said, if you can get him on the phone, I believe he will talk. And the thread that runs through all of this as far as a common thread is when those people start talking, they don't quit. They've had this just caught up inside. And finally, when they run into somebody that seems to understand and care, they let go and it's good for them. And I think that's in large measure the reason for our success.
That makes sense, bro.
Yeah. And then on the other end with the Battle Ready Ministries, it's a more aggressive, theologically, certainly more aggressive. We are trying to just battle the devil. And there are so many churches that have pastors, and a lot of this was really flushed out with COVID, Denny. They're scared. They won't preach the gospel because they're afraid their dwindling masses will not come back. Many of them have churches where people got used to, if they even go to church at all, they'll go to their living room and turn on the TV. And I do not believe, except for people who can't do otherwise, I just don't believe that's the same thing. And so you just see a struggle. And so we're trying to get the message out through writing, through speaking, in any way we can. And the president, a guy named Dave Giamona, is a retired Army chaplain. He's extremely effective in dealing with many people in the upper crust in America. So he's been on hundreds of radio and TV programs. And I would not be surprised if one of our approaches in the near future will be a Christian television program. We've already received an offer. It's just these things take money. It's a matter of raising the funds. But the two-pronged approach with each of these collectively, it's having an effect. We're reaching people.
Well, I can't but believe that what you're doing is exactly what God wants it's done. I mean, that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to reach out. And when he points you in a direction and there's a real need there, you're sort of foolish if you don't go in that direction, right?
You are so right, Denny. And if I could sort of encapsulate, as I look back over the last 7 years, I feel like I'm beating the same drum, but I think it's the right drum, and that is this. In America these days, and in the world as well, I believe the truth is rarely told. There is a Christian song out, and I believe that the song has a sort of a refrain, and I'm trying to remember the name of the author, Matthew West. And when I heard that song, it just grabbed me. And so we're trying to just get the truth out. And I keep wondering, why is it so hard to get the truth out? And I've come to the conclusion, Denny, and this is a unfortunate thing to say, but I believe it's true. There are many reasons. We're in a spiritual warfare that's going to be around till Jesus comes back. But I do believe Christians and non-believers as well, many just don't want to hear the truth. Why? Because we don't have enough trust in God. We think that, oh no, I'm going to be sent to the uttermost ends of the earth and everything that I know about my life is going to explode and I'll have to change and give up everything and it'll be miserable. I believe it's just the opposite. And I think one of the primary efforts that I make is to let people know that God's plan for them, and he has a plan for every human being, is the best plan they could ever have.
Well said, brother, and I could not agree more with you. Sometimes it's a little scary to take that step, but it's always worth it.
It is. Always. And, you know, even included that are the times when, say, we're on a path serving God and we step off to the right or left and chase some dream or, you know, something else. We might be praying for some new opportunity, and those prayers are heard, but the requests are denied. And then you look back and say, Lord, boy, am I glad I didn't join with that group or this or link with that person. That would not have worked out. That would have been a disaster. And so I'm seeing this winding road of God's will for our lives. It's got many ups and downs, twists and turns, but there's nothing better. And all of these uncertainties and these tests, they simply build our faith. We need to be tested. You don't go into a gym. You've got to break muscles down in order to experience growth. And I think spiritually it's the same thing.
Well said, brother. Scott, thank you. Thank you for sharing those insights. Thank you for being a great friend. Thank you for taking time to join us today. I totally agree with your comments. Yes.
Well, thank you. And it's, I think we just have to continue to pursue the truth, you know, certainly true with salvation, but I think it's true with all aspects of life. Jesus said, you know, you shall know the truth and the truth will set you free.
Amen.
And that's what we want to see, is the shackles taken off people and just live for God and find out it's challenging, but how much fun, how rewarding, and ultimately it is to our benefit and certainly to the building of God's kingdom. And there's no better thing to be doing in this life as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, sir. God bless you, Scott. Thanks for joining us today, brother.
Well, God bless you, Denny. Thank you so much for the privilege of being with you.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag, then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? Once your range are ready, then stand at ease.
$30 trillion in debt, 20 years of endless war, and veterans not able to get the care they deserve. These are some of the issues concerned Veterans for America is confronting head-on. At CVA, we aim to amplify the veteran perspective to create a better future for all Americans. But we need your help. Join CVA in shaping a better tomorrow for you, your family, and your community. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement. That's cv4a.org.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum, the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Okay, team, it is mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Please do send me your thoughts to Denny at frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Peter, the son of an Air Force vet, never heard of the month of the military child until he heard it on your show. As a child, he and his siblings and his mother did suffer with their dad away at war. It's appropriate to recognize and stand with military children.
Peter, you're absolutely right. It's been said that they also serve our nation who stay at home and wait. Enduring the danger that the service member faces in their absence from the family is an honorable service to our nation and should be recognized.
And Marine vet Sue Ellen appreciated General Bergman's comments. There is so much to understand about the crazy world we live in, and she appreciates the insightful comments she gets from the show.
Thank you, Sue Ellen. Our goal is to do what you described. And now it's time for military history. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 12 May 1780, during the Revolutionary War, after a siege that began on April 2nd, Americans suffered their worst defeat of the Revolution with the unconditional surrender of Major General Benjamin Lincoln to British Lieutenant General Sir Henry Clinton and his army of 10,000 at Charleston, South Carolina. With the victory, the British captured more than 3,000 patriots and a great quantity of munitions and equipment, losing only 250 killed and wounded in the process. Confident of British control in the South, Lieutenant General Clinton sailed north to New York after the victory, having learned of an impending French expedition to the British-occupied northern state. He left General Charles Cornwallis in command of 8,300 British forces in the South. South Carolina was a deeply divided state, and the British presence let loose the full violence of a civil war upon the population. First, the British used loyalists to pacify the Patriot population. The Patriots returned the violence in kind. The guerrilla warfare strategies employed by Patriots Francis Marion, Thomas Sumter, and Nathaniel Greene throughout the Carolina Campaign of 1780 and 81 eventually chased the far more numerous British force into Virginia, where they eventually surrendered at Yorktown on October 19, 1781. Having suffered the humiliation of surrendering to the British at Charleston, Major General Lincoln was able to turn the tables and accept Cornwallis's ceremonial surrender to General George Washington at Yorktown on October 20.
On 8 May 1792, Congress passed the second portion of the Militia Act, requiring that every free, able-bodied white male citizen of the respective states resident therein, who is or shall be of age 18 years and under the age of 45, be enrolled in the militia.
And on 8 May 1945, both Great Britain and the U.S. celebrated victory in Europe Day. Cities in both nations, as well as formerly occupied cities in Western Europe, put out flags and banners rejoicing in the defeat of the Nazi war machine. The 8th of May spelled the day when German troops throughout Europe finally laid down their arms. In Prague, Germans surrendered to their Soviet antagonists after the latter had lost more than 8,000 soldiers and the Germans considerably more. In Copenhagen and Oslo, at Karlshorst near Berlin, in northern Latvia, on the Channel Island of Sark, the German surrender was realized in a final ceasefire. More surrender documents were signed in Berlin and in eastern Germany. The main concern of many German soldiers was to elude the grasp of Soviet forces to keep from being taken prisoner. About 1 million Germans attempted a mass exodus to the west when the fighting in Czechoslovakia ended, but were stopped by the Russians and taken captive. The Russians took approximately 2 million prisoners in the period just before and after the German surrender. Meanwhile, more than 13,000 British POWs were released and sent back to Great Britain. Pockets of German-Soviet confrontation would continue into the next day. On May 9, the Soviets would lose 600 more soldiers in Silesia before the Germans finally surrendered. Consequently, VE Day was not celebrated until the 9th in Moscow.
That was the end of the war in Europe. The war with Japan would go on until that summer. Okay, on 11 May 1961, President Kennedy approved sending 400 Special Forces troops and 100 other U.S. military advisors into South Vietnam. On that same day, he ordered the startup of clandestine warfare against North Vietnam to be conducted by South Vietnamese agents under the direction and training of the CIA and U.S. Special Forces troops. Kennedy's orders also called for South Vietnamese forces to infiltrate Laos to locate and disrupt communist bases and supply lines there.
And on 10 May 1968, during the Vietnam War, the U.S. 9th Marine Regiment and the 3rd Brigade of the 101st Airborne Division, along with South Vietnamese forces, commenced Operation Apache Snow. The purpose of the operation was to cut off the North Vietnamese and prevent them from mounting an attack on the coastal provinces. During the intense fighting, 597 North Vietnamese were reported killed, and U.S. casualties were 56 killed and 420 wounded. Due to the bitter fighting and the high loss of life, the battle for Ap Bia Mountain received widespread unfavorable publicity in the U.S., and American media dubbed it Hamburger Hill, a name evidently derived from the fact that the battle turned into a meat grinder. Since the operation was not intended to hold territory, but rather to keep the North Vietnamese army off balance, the mountain was abandoned soon after the battle and occupied by the North Vietnamese a month later.
That really annoyed me. And on 12 May 1975, the U.S. freighter Mayaguez and its 39-man crew was captured by gunboats of the Cambodian Navy. Cambodia had fallen to communist insurgents, the Khmer Rouge, in April of 1973. The Cambodian authorities imprisoned the American crew, pending an investigation on the ship and why it had sailed into waters claimed by Cambodia. The response of the U.S. government was quick. President Gerald Ford called the Cambodian seizure of the Mayaguez, quote, an act of piracy, and promised swift action to rescue the captured Americans. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
This is a tough one. An armed 86-year-old man in California is being hailed as a hero by his neighbor, Eva Strickland, after he fatally shot her schizophrenic son, who was high on drugs. Strickland said that her son came to her home with a large shovel and demanded lottery money he said he'd won. She said her son had no such lottery winnings. Her son used the shovel to pry open a metal door on the house and then pushed the elderly woman to the floor. He attacked her, but an unidentified armed 86-year-old neighbor intervened by shooting him. When police arrived on the scene, they found James deceased. Strickland is heralding her neighbor as a hero, saying she would not be alive if it were not for him. She added that her son James was acting delusional and committed a form of suicide that day.
Thanks, Colonel. This criminal event makes for an interesting study and highlights a disturbing fact. You probably already know the person who is going to murder you. According to the 2017 FBI Uniform Crime Report, where a total of 15,129 murders were tracked, 6,103 of those murder victims knew their attacker. Most of them were killed by relatives. That lends credence to the old saying, familiarity breeds contempt. Or, the better you know someone, the more likely you are to kill them. I found that rather sad, since the people who should be loving you the most are members of your own family. I thought that might be unique to America, but then discovered that in South Africa, 80% of their victims are also being killed by people they know. Of those 15,129 victims in the FBI report, only 1,469 were known to have been killed by strangers. Another disturbing fact was that 7,557 of the murders went unsolved. That's almost exactly 50%. So, when you do the math for just the murders where the relationship is known, it goes like this. 6,103 knew their attacker, and 1,469 were killed by strangers. Do the math, and that tells you that 80.6% of murder victims knew their attacker. That's a disturbing statistic. However, it does give you some insight into how you can protect yourself against your potential killer. One of the most important things you can do to defend against a deadly attack is to use good judgment when choosing the people you associate with. Now, granted, there's not a whole lot you can do about relatives gone bad, because as the old saying goes, you can pick your friends, but you're stuck with your relatives. Nonetheless, if you have a mentally ill or drug-dependent friend, neighbor, or relative, you must make a clear plan of action. Limit the interaction you have with dangerous people, even if you happen to love them. I know that's a hard thing to do emotionally, but it could very well save your life. And think it out and decide whether or not you have the ability to defend yourself against someone you love who's trying to hurt you. Some people can't defend themselves against a loved one and choose to die at their hand. Be honest with yourself and come up with a realistic plan that works and will help you survive. In today's story, the woman was either unwilling or unable to protect herself. Thank God for her 86-year-old neighbor who was able to intervene on her behalf. She seems to be grateful. It's one thing to use deadly force against a stranger, but quite another to kill someone you love to save your own life. Not everyone can do it, so you need to think about it in advance and be honest about your abilities. This is a bittersweet ending. So while Front Lines of Freedom mourns with this woman on the loss of her son, we also praise the courage and willingness of her neighbor to protect her life.
Well said. Our movie of the month is World War II Codebreakers Who Saved America. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog, get the link, and watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month, and I'd appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, Reverend Bill Cook will introduce us to the Black Robe Regiment, its prayer warriors in support of our nation. Then Colonel Sam Thiessen will talk about STARS, that's fighting against the woke critical race theory stuff that's being forced on our military. And Army vet Dr. John Littell will discuss the abuse of medical people today. Our book, Front Lines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation, and it's now available in Spanish. You can purchase this book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call-to-action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.